Take a few moments, follow up on Brother Dale's class. Baptist history is just a tremendous, tremendous wealth of information. It's amazing how you go from, well, the Old Testament to the New Testament. You know, what does 2 Timothy tell us about living godly? You shall suffer persecution, 2:12. What happens in America? The same thing. What's the smallest state in the nation? Rhode Island. What became the only Baptist colony? Is there any correlation? Yeah, forgive me for this, but trying to do a map here. This is Massachusetts, this is Connecticut, this is New York. Boy, this is New Jersey. That's Rhode Island. In the middle of Rhode Island is a great big bay. And you know how fertile Rhode Island is? It's not. It is not fertile at all. It is rocky. This is the wasteland. The wasteland. When they were expelled, this area, there was no charter for this. There was charters for everything else. This was what nobody wanted this. And yet they eke out a living. Brother Bo talked about existing. That's what these people were doing. Now, roll the clock. Oh, by the way, when I had the opportunity to be in Newport, Rhode Island, I visited the very first church in America, the real very first church in America, Baptist Church. What's not talked about is you'll never guess what's at the end of the block. The very first synagogue in America, within a year or two, after the first Baptist church. Now, why would the very first synagogue in America be located within a block of the very first Baptist church? Because the Jews was no more accepted than the Baptists were accepted. But the Baptists, when given a chance to rule, did what?
Gave religious freedom.
Gave religious freedom.
Because that's what the Bible says. Choose you this day whom you will serve.
Yes. Can you imagine what must have been happening on that block over the weeks and months? The discourses that must have been encountering there? The Baptists got nothing. But yet God blessed him. Brother Dale, did you have something?
No, go ahead.
Roll the clock ahead, you get to the revolution, and you all know about what's going on up here in Boston. You know, the tea rebellion, the stamp tax, and all that stuff. What is all that? That's economics. That's all economics. And for some peculiar reason, the colonies didn't have enough manpower just to say, well, economically, we're going to throw it over. Economically, they didn't have that. What they needed down here in Philadelphia was every single person they could muster. And guess who they needed?
They needed the Baptists from Rhode Island District.
Yes. And the Baptists from Rhode Island had populated throughout by the time the revolution came. And because they were desperate for manpower, a guy by the name of Isaac Backus, a so-called Baptist, but influential for Baptist principles with the Continental Congress, with George Washington, kept saying, we will fight. And the Baptists said, we will fight But we're not fighting for economic advantage. We're not fighting for the repeal of the Stamp Act. We're fighting for religious freedom. That's what Brother Dell's pounding on. This is amazing stuff that occurs here. And down here on a Wednesday night in a Baptist church, as the revolution starts, a Baptist minister gets on the pulpit and reads the account of what has happened to the Baptist churches in New England, about the slaughter of the Baptist churches, the brethren. And he says, "Brethren, who goes with me?" And that night, on a Wednesday night, every single man of that church and every teenage boy of that church signed up for the revolution. Can you imagine that happening in our churches? That on a Wednesday night service, every man, not for repeal of the king, not for getting rid of the Stamp Act, but because our brethren are being slaughtered, because they are fighting for religious freedom, we are going. Then the revolution is won, and a Continental Congress convenes, and a Constitution is ordered, and it's written out complete, and it's done, and it's whole, except there's something missing. And that's okay, it'll be taken care of. And these same people who bled and died and cost tremendously stood up and said, "We will not support a constitution." Again, the balance. The Baptists were the one with the thumb. Could go either way. They needed us in the revolution. Now they need us to pass the constitution. And they said, "Don't worry about it. Trust us. We trusted you in the revolution. Here's the document. It's not mentioned." And thus, the First Amendment. And when we spoke up, everyone else threw their little thing in. Well, we don't think the press needs to be repressed either. Okay, you get that. You end up with all of that. Glory, hallelujah, amen. Everything's fine now. We got a constitution, we got a bill of rights, we got everything. Everybody lives happily ever after. Except now, coming from Baptists in Connecticut, in 1800, we've already had George Washington as president. We've already had John Adams as president.
And we still have some state churches.
Yeah. Still going on. And you may have heard this phrase, separation of church and state. It comes from the Baptists in Connecticut. For what reason? They send a letter to Thomas Jefferson, the Danbury, Connecticut Association. 1800, sends a letter to Thomas Jefferson. Who is he? He is now the President of the United States. He's the newly elected President of the United States in 1800. And they say, "We have fought, we have died, we have done all this, we've got a Constitution, we've got a First Amendment. When are we going to be able to worship without persecution?" And a letter comes back from Thomas Jefferson to the Baptists that says, "I have always believed in separation of church and state. That the church should not be hindered by the state. That there should be freedom of worship." That little statement from this guy gets picked up and reiterated, but now turned on its head, that says, the church can't talk. You can't open your mouth.
Yeah.
You can't say a prayer in school. Yeah. You can't mention God and government. Brother Dixon and Brother McDill.
So that's the point of, let's just use, not rightly dividing the context in which that conversation happened, those amendments were put forth, that writing was all done, not look, just reading the words and not reading the context in which the words were applied. And,
exactly.
And if we just, if people in power today would just read the context of those words, but, you know, we just want to read the word and not look at the context.
True. But also, always remember, everybody has an agenda.
Yep.
And they're going to spin it their way. Unless... the Brethren came to America for freedom. And when they landed in Pennsylvania, in Massachusetts, they discovered, it's amazing, the Puritans came to America for religious freedom. One of the first things they do when they get to America, everybody believes like us, you die. Well, we came with you. Yeah, well, repent or die. Well, we're not repenting, we're right. Then get out of here and go live in the godforsaken country, land. For hundreds of years, this went on. It's still going on. Still going on. Brother Dale.
Well, you just said it. If you look at, and you just did a quick little deal there, if you look at the 150 plus years, what was going on that led to the brethren there in Connecticut to make that statement,
mm-hmm.
and then the response of the president, there was no question that the government had been oppressing and causing trouble for, and I'm going to say Baptists, there were others as well, the Quakers, we've read about
yeah.
some of the stuff they had to go through and whatever, and then I mean, there's some others, okay,
mm-hmm.
but the bottom line was, if you just look at what had been going on for 150 plus years, there was no question what the context was.
Thank you, because where's Thomas Jefferson from?
Virginia.
Yeah. He's down here in Virginia, and Brother Dale's already taught us that they had a state church. In fact, by Thomas Jefferson's time, they've got three of them. And you have a choice.
Yep.
You can support the...
your money can go to...
Yeah. Yep. You can go to the Presbyterians or the...
Congregationalists, I think.
Congregationalists.
Was it Congregationalists? Well, yes.
And also the Episcopalians. And Thomas Jefferson sitting down there in Monticello going, you know...
No.
I just don't... Thomas Jefferson is a little bit agnostic.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing. Huh? It's okay to question God. He's big enough to take your questions. If you got somebody who's agnostic, they're at least saying that they don't know. An atheist is just lying. But the worst of all is a religionist. Because they have drunk the Kool-Aid of a false religion, and it's almost impossible to get through to them. It's very difficult. But Thomas Jefferson's down here, and he has seen the effect of a church state. And now he gets a letter as president from a Baptist association in Connecticut saying, when are we going to get our freedoms that's been promised us, that's been guaranteed by the Constitution? When are we going to get them? And Thomas Jefferson says, now. Unfortunately, that was a good piece of paper. Because it's 1820, 20 more years before the state-sponsored persecution stops.
I think I read where in Massachusetts that finally went off the law. The law was taken off in 1833. The law.
Yeah.
Yeah, was taken off about the established church and support and whatever. I mean, they might have stopped her, but that's a long time.
It's a long time.
1833, if you start doing 1833.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yes, Brother Hawker.
In the garden, Satan lied. We bought it, we can become gods. And it just, the simplicity of all this, you know, and I agree with Brother Mike, the wrongly dividing. I also agree with what you said, agenda. What's the agenda of the human?
Mm-hmm.
Is to rule and control.
Yeah.
this experiment, as they call it, was about freedom. 2 Corinthians 3:17, now the Lord is that spirit, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. Those men and women that fought for that liberty had the spirit of Christ, because that's where freedom is. Mm-hmm. But in all the while, it's always humans want authority, and they want to control, and they want to rule. And those that want to live by God say, well, God is our rule. He is our lawgiver. And that's been a 6,000-year battle.
Exactly. That's why we have diocheses in church. It is our nature to rule, and we will rule whoever. And when we can rule a church, we'll be a diocese and rule the church. When a Baptist church ends up in Rhode Island, and now for the first time they really get to establish their own rules, it is a temptation to say, like the Puritans did, oh, finally, we got our own place. Now everybody has to play our game.
No, they didn't. But they didn't, though.
But they didn't.
They let others come in.
They followed the Lord and let... And that's why it's... And I've always been amazed that more's not done with the fact that there's a first synagogue next to the First Baptist Church, and the First Baptist Church was first in time by a year or two.
And along with that, that First Amendment... came the Second Amendment. And you talk about a struggle in the spiritual mind. What did you say those brethren did?
Took up arms.
They took up what?
And legs and
arms.
And, yep.
So, I mean, it's, and you think about this, does diplomacy work against the unruly, the unstubborn, and the unreasonable? No. Diplomacy doesn't work.
There was a
battle of independence because diplomacy wasn't working. Letters written, ploys were said, and it just finally comes up to squeezing one off.
Brother Dale and I love history, and it's really hard to squeeze everything in. Yeah. But for an example, there was once a, they wasn't called Baptists at that time, but a scriptural churches had their own kingdom called Thrace. It existed 70 years. Mm-hmm. It's over in, right here. This is where Thrace is at. Black Sea, Greece, Thrace. They were following God. They had wonderful laws, freedom of religion. They didn't have a militia, because you don't need a militia if you're following God. The funny thing is, after 70 years, here comes the marauding troops in and destroys the entire government, destroys the entire country. Because sadly, we're defiled human beings, and there's times that the only thing people know is force. There's times the only thing a bully knows is a bloody nose. Brother Dixon and Brother Dale.
Well, as this, you know, before these amendments came forth or even got forth, you know, on Thomas Jefferson's plantation, he allowed the scriptural church to meet. He would sit in and observe how they handled their business.
As went to attend his aunt's.
And he's intrigued. He's like, hey, what an idea. This works.
And
that's, you know, how our government started to the process. You know, now we're light years away from that now, but that's how, you know, equal opportunity to voice your opinion, and then majority vote.
And he wasn't the only one. You know, I think James Madison and, I'm losing all the other names.
But these men maybe didn't all believe, but they were shaped by a scriptural church. And then when it came time for them to, you know, draft a new government and come up with how that government's to operate and function, they had this input that they have observed or experienced through scriptural churches that influenced them in the writing of what we know as our Constitution.
Yep.
There are innumerable Esters at this point in time. Because simply fighting for our freedom, you see, the Constitution didn't grant it. We had innumerable Esthers who stood up to say we need to fight, and having fought, they wasn't able to lay down their arms. They laid down their muskets, but then they had to pick up their political arms and say,
we got a fight yet that's not over yet.
But they had established credibility
fighting,
and their pastors were out there with them. And then they said, yeah, we know these guys.
Exactly. Isaac Backus being one of the most prolific because he had the ear of George Washington. He had proven himself loyal and fastidious and great and focused. Brother Bo.
Well, and they were, their focus was religious freedom.
Yes.
It wasn't personal or individual freedom. Every other citizen in America was, or whatever, and I'm not saying they weren't going to benefit from personal freedom and being out from under the king's rule and getting to go out and shoot a deer and it not being the king's deer and all that stuff, but their focus, what, I mean, just the numbers, 58 churches in the 13 colonies, I mean, these were people who were witnessing, they were contending for the faith, they were preaching the gospel, and they were focused on doing the Lord's work. And as they were hindered because of these things, yeah, they wrote the letters and they took up arms and they went and did this all for religious freedom. It didn't get twisted and it didn't get misconstrued into personal freedoms.
Let me back you up there. Because we realize all freedoms spring from spiritual freedom.
That's right.
And without spiritual freedom, the personal freedoms don't matter a dingle. So we've always focused on first get the spiritual down, then the rest will matter. But talking about economic freedom don't mean nothing if your spirit's not free.
Yeah. I mean, 7,300 churches in 1836. We're talking, some of these laws were still on the books in 1830s.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So their focus was the Great Commission. Their focus was the Lord's work and doing mission work and starting other churches and all that stuff. And the Lord blessed.
Yeah.
And as they faced opposition, they like I said, they took up arms and they wrote letters and they testified before governors and Congress, but they didn't lose that focus.
Excellent. They didn't lose that focus, and they didn't lose their faith at the door of the church. What do I mean? They went out in the community and they spread the gospel. And when they joined the militia, it wasn't pass me the hard tack and the ammunition and I hope to get home so I can go to church. They're talking to everyone.
Exactly.
Everyone. So that when the Constitution's done, what you don't hear is, we never heard from the Baptist. Who's the Baptist? Where this? We haven't heard about this religious freedom stuff. They're going, oh yeah, that thorn.
We talk about the tenacity of the enemy of God, but for 1,800 years, these men and women are still standing on the same biblical principles and the same right for the Lord. They're not going away either.
Exactly.
You're right. It's these guys again. They're still here. A thorn of society for sure.
Yeah. Brother Dale.
You've already went past it, but I wanted you to just take a minute and talk. You know how you mentioned there were three at one time there in Virginia? You said, and forgive me for this, but there it was coming to a vote about just having the Baptists as one.
Yeah,
and this is huge. After everything they've been through in America for the last 200 years, 150 years, it was going to come to a vote to let the Baptists be one of those that... And our brethren, no.
Isn't that good?
They stuck with the scriptures and said, no, that's not what this is about.
Yeah. The Baptists became such a problem in Virginia that the politicians knew the solution. You know what what the solution is to 99% of all problems? Money. You throw enough money at it, kids will be educated. The problem is our students don't have enough resources. Fact is that you're not teaching them forgive me, Brother Dale, but you have to face it all the time.
I
We think throwing money at a problem solves it, because that works so many times. So you have these pesky Baptists saying, we're tired of paying. Can you imagine paying your tithe to your church and the government saying you're giving 10% to the Episcopalian church? Now, try to live on, and that's not even counting your tax to the government. We talk about high taxes. You think some of the brethren are going, you know, I love you, Lord, but I just, you know, with what I got left here, I don't think I can give you 10% this month. And when the Baptists are screaming about it, the politicians say, oh, we understand. We'll make it cut four ways. The other three churches, denominations, religions, they're willing to take a cut back and put your nose in the trough, and we'll all be happy again. And the fortitude of our brethren to look at money in the bank and say, we won't have that. We won't be a part of it. We're not talking small change here. We're talking about a guaranteed monthly income from the state. What could we do with that? We could build church plants. We could pay missionaries. All the great good that could come of this would be absolutely nothing. Because it wasn't done of a free will offering. And what we would have become would have been an abomination in God's sight. And we would have been yet another religion. And you would have heard of some independent, wide-eyed, wild Baptist that wouldn't have anything to do with it. Because that's what happened in 325 AD. When the state came knocking on the door of the church then. We end the persecution, you join us, and it'll be the state, and you can have us supporting you, and we can further you. Wow. And some went. And it's always interested me that one of the very first edicts of the new Roman Catholic Church, the Universal Church, under Constantine was, the publicity is, all the churches joined together. That's interesting, because one of the first edicts was to persecute the churches that didn't come. That means there's some churches that didn't come. For the tears.
It just shows you right there the deceitfulness of Satan. I mean, you see it many times, just like you said it. Oh, we're giving you all these persons. You have an opportunity now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't this be nice? Here it is. You can get away from all that stuff.
It happens to us personally. Yeah. It happens to us in churches. Can you imagine sitting in an association meeting? And the topic being, we've got to stand up to the federal government because the state government ain't going to do it. This is Connecticut. They're sort of between the... it's now called the tri-state area, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. Well, I blew that because it's much shorter there. They're sort of in between Massachusetts and Rhode Island. They're sort of halfway between there. They're not quite as bad off as Rhode Island, but they're certainly not as prosperous as Massachusetts. They're sort of the misbegotten. Oh, by the way, the South is known for cotton and tobacco. The North, you know, Massachusetts is known for the seafaring ports and stuff. Rhode Island becomes a seaport because that's all they got, fisheries. To this very day, you know what the number one industry in Connecticut is? Anybody ever hear of Hartford Insurance? The number one industry, even to this day, is insurance. Because there ain't much there to farm. So they had to go a different direction. And now, after all these years, it's kind of interesting to see how everything plays out. And always in the background, I've always been amazed. You scratch the surface deep enough, and it starts leading a Baptist. And it's going to this very hour, to this very day. It's now fallen upon us. Do we choose to be quiet? Thank God. We had brethren that when the revolution came, didn't say, well, God said for us to be separate. That's their fight, not our fight. Besides, they got the state religions, and what good is it going to do for us? They took up arms. And they fought. Brother Dale.
Some of those brethren, we don't know all their names, of course, but there was more than just one or two apostles. Those brethren knew their scriptures. They had studied their Bible. They knew what was right, whether it was infant baptism or if it was not accepted money from the state for funding. They knew their scriptures. They knew how the New Testament church was to operate in Pratt. They knew that. And they communicated with the congregation. They all it's a major stand.
Major stand. And they were reaching outside of themselves.
Yes.
We have in the last 50 to 75 years pulled inward. We've got to reverse that. Wherever we're at, whatever we're doing, we need to push forward. When I was in the Bar Leadership College, the inaugural one, it was interesting. The bar decided that what they needed to do was groom the very best attorneys for government positions, society positions. So they gave invitations to those that they chose that would make the very best. And they poured a whole lot of resources into this thing. And then came the diversity seminar. And you got muckety mucks from all over the country. It's being led by a black gentleman out of Chicago. And the first thing we had to do, and there's like 80 students, we call them students, and there's probably 100, probably about 30 of the high muckety mucks watching the 80, had to come up with a group you don't like. Well, there's some groups that you just can't say. Because if you even mention their name, there's going to be a firefight. So everyone's going, I'm not going to be here. They came up with one. Evangelical Christians. And it was almost standing ovation. Yeah, oh yeah, don't like them. No, boy. No, no, no. Hate those people. Oh, they're evil, 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 evil. And I'm sitting there going, you know, I can just keep my mouth shut because I'm not an evangelical Christian. I don't identify as an evangelical Christian. I can skate my way through this. Or I can be me and stand for my Lord and let the fur fly wherever it flies. And I went, I've got a problem. And you could have heard a pin drop. I don't identify as evangelical Christian, but I do identify as a Christian. And this speech is hate speech. This is inappropriate and wrong for the leaders of this nation to be talking this way. Their response was, oh, not you, Mike. You're one of the good ones. I looked at the leader of the meeting, who was black, and I said, I have nothing against you. You're one of the good ones. He goes, what? You can't say. Oh, feels different, doesn't it, when it's coming at you? He goes, whoa, wait a minute. He's right. You can't be saying, you can't attack Christians. Now, if I would have sat there and been quiet, all the high muckety mucks would have felt it was okay to track and target Christians. But when I stood up, I first became the exception. Well, we'll spare Mike. We'll go after all the other Christians. But as I stood and contended, I swayed the room back over and got the Christians off of being targeted, the lawful group to target, the discrimination. What it takes is each and every one of us standing and entering the fire wherever we're at and pushing forward, pushing God's cause forward in all ways, from personal witnessing to public defense. And sometimes you'll be called on to reach outside your comfort zone. These brethren, they live lives outside their comfort zone. Do you think the brethren up here in Danbury, Connecticut, the association, when they wrote that letter to Thomas Jefferson, do you think they knew exactly what the response was going to be? Or do you think there might have been a little trepidation going, we may be opening another can of worms, guys. You know, we didn't get it in the Constitution. We got the First Amendment, but they're not doing that. And now if we say we really want the First Amendment, they may thump us. We may lose our place here in Connecticut. When I was able to be back there, I attended the only Missionary Baptist Scriptural Church in Connecticut. And he told me when I was there, the only church in Rhode Island had just disbanded. And he said, and I mentioned something about youth rallies. He said, you guys have youth rallies? Man, we went to ours this year. This year? Yeah, we have a youth rally in Pennsylvania. Now I think Brother Dolan told me that the church in Connecticut disbanded.
I don't know if it's a coincidence, but it's kind of where my mind goes. Connecticut is also known as the arsenal of democracy because they have a valley of arms. A plethora of firearms manufacturers started in 1797 there.
That's right. That's right.
A lot of guns come out of Connecticut.
That's right.
Is that what I say? Coincidence? I don't know.
Interesting how things relate. Sadly,
it's still happening today. Dad just got a phone call yesterday or day before. Pastor in Pensacola, Florida, churches disbanded. They got down to just a couple members. They couldn't pay for their bills, had to disband just this week.
Yeah. Yeah, Sister Denise Novaki, Dr. Denise Novaki, she's one of the premier neuropsychologists in the nation. She saved, attended church with us. She still lives in New Jersey. After attending church with us, she went back. There's no New Testament church in anywhere close to where she was. Went to a Universal Unitarian Church, the closest that she could find in sort of a non-denominational thing. And they're nothing. She was just tearing her hair out. And she ran into a lady in her late 80s and got talking with her about how Denise came to her because Denise was raised Catholic. And they talked about that, and she said, well, I went to a Missionary Baptist church in Oregon, and the lady said, are you kidding me? They still exist? When I was a little girl, I went to a Missionary Baptist church. Could you feel the Spirit there? And he said, yeah, it's the only place I've ever felt the Spirit. And she goes, no, I don't mean mystical, you know, talking in tongues and all. I mean you can feel the presence of God. And these two, this lady who was in her late 80s could remember. And what happened? Her church disbanded. And she's left adrift, like the Sister Denise was left adrift, trying to find some place to land to get fed. Why does it happen? Well, we can say it's a sign of the times, but frankly, it's the laziness of our membership. That we are, you know, how many of us would quit our jobs and join the militia just so our families could worship? Just because our brethren in LeGrand was being slaughtered, or in Vancouver, or in Medford. Most of us would go, I make a motion we take up an offering. They'll buy some musket balls. And it's better for us to stay here and work so we can buy more musket balls and support them. That's not what these brethren did, and that's not what really made the difference. Now, I have no doubt that some of the churches did, but what made the difference was those brethren that stood in the gap. Brother Dixon.
I'm just trying to get 68 people to go to camp on the 13th do some things that need to help for the largest outreach of the ministry in the state of Oregon. Have a hard time doing that.
And you have a waiting list of people to do that. You're having the hard time is figuring out.
I can't get pastors to announce it when you ask them to announce it.
The rules were too hard. They asked for workers and not watchers.
Oh!
You can't do that. You can't do that.
Maybe you're going about announce there is a mini retreat for just 7 to 8.
Yeah. No, we'll take time off to do just about anything.
Yeah, Eddie is in Zion. Well, thanks for rightly dividing the word. Probably the best class of rightly dividing the word you've had all year.
And I appreciate that being said too, because there's still, it seems like, a pushback for being assertive and vocal on contending for faith, preaching the truth, standing for what's right. And, you know, we talk about, you know, you standing up for your Lord. And, you know, you're walking down the street and there's Jehovah's Witnesses with their big stands. You got the Mormons that are knocking on everybody's doors. You have the big charismatic congregations and everybody talks about how awesome everything is. And we just sit there and we don't say anything because we don't want a conflict. We don't want to be inconvenienced. We don't want to do any of that stuff. So maybe our battle isn't, you know, with the armory, but why are we not standing up and talking more and having those, you know, conflicts, if you will? And what's this thing still about, you know, we're to be peaceful, quiet, calm Christians? I just don't see that in the history of God's work. You know, that's what we need. We need those soldiers that will stand up for the Lord and speak that truth regardless of what happens.
That's it. And surprisingly, when I mentioned I've got a problem with this, it wasn't the crowd went, he's a Christian. The response was, oh, you're one of the good ones, Mike.
Yeah.
From the day one, I am who I am.
Yeah.
We had to introduce ourselves. I introduced myself. Now about, you had 5 minutes to explain who you are and where you come from. About 20 minutes later, 3 or 4 more people, a woman introduced herself. She's a lesbian, and she spent her 5 minutes attacking me. And the leader of that conference started listing the names and the labels she called me. And he had the whole board filled up with bigot, closed-minded, evil, I mean the whole thing. He said, now from this day forth, none of these words will ever be used again. And I'm looking at her going, I've never met this woman. I've never met her. Now, months later, because the college was a year long, about 6-7 months later, to my chagrin, they put her and I together. And I wondered what was happening in the federal courtroom in Portland. Because you come on up, Mike, and whoever this other woman is, you come on up. And here's the topic. And I'm looking, and all of a sudden there's like 25 people in the literal seats there. Hi, how are you? What you doing? And just before we get to it, you know, oh, I just had a baby. She's thin as a rail. You did? Yeah. He was 9 pounds. Wow. You and your husband must be very... I don't have a husband! Oh, it's you! And everyone's going, hi. They're all going, yeah, Mike had about 3 minutes before he put his head in it. You stand. You're going to get... You know, what we don't want to be is discomforted. You're going to get discomforted, but you know what? Peter had a choice. He was going to get discomforted that night. His life was going to be discomforted. Your choice is, what is the most least discomforting? He figured out denying Christ was much more costly than contending. That's why Obadiah Holmes could say, it felt like rose petals on my back. That's why the president of Harvard could look and say, he's got something I need, and it's worth my career to follow it. We need to demonstrate that and share that. I am way over time. Brother Dixon, forgive me, but if you'd like to talk about baptism, feel free. This is